Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. YouTube high. Shout out to the Cutters and Roamers. We will get to y'all later. Thank you for dropping the comments. We'll get to your New Year's resolution later in this pod. Like, subscribe, comment. We will include you. We appreciate y'all. And Nikias, you know, I was thinking this morning, Nikias.
Okay.
Just no matter what obstacle comes your way in life, right? No matter how giant the struggles may be.
I see.
It's about weathering the storm. It's about not riding waves, Nikias. It's keeping the main thing the main thing. You know, right now, regardless of what's going on outside of us, anything external, it's about controlling what we can. You got to do the work. You got to do what you need to do, but all you need is a crumb. All you need is an opportunity. We have that opportunity today to entertain the masses. In the end, it's about how you respond, Nikias. We have to respond. And we, as a team, decided that it's time to hoop it up.
Absolutely sickening for you to mix in some Jalen Hurts post-game commentary into the pod intro. And as we record on this Monday morning, I am still very much upset. I guess we are exactly like a week and some hours away from the Philadelphia Eagles taking on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And buddy, my confidence level is at like 0.1 right now with this team. But that is a different podcast entirely. I don't want to talk about it. Anyway, let's dig right into it. We are back. Second YouTube pod, I guess, technically of 2024. But early in the month, which means it's time for the second rookie report. So we're going to dig in, get some updates on some of the top guys, and then bring in some new guys to talk about that we didn't really get to in detail on the first rookie report. So we're going to have some fun with that. But first, let's get into some Golden State Warriors related news items. Chris Paul suffered a fracture in his left hand, had surgery over the weekend. He is out 4 to 6 weeks. Naturally, that's going to lead to some rotation changes. Just going back to last night's game against the Toronto Raptors, we did see Moses Moody back in the rotation, over 20 minutes, scored 21 points. We saw Corey Joseph in the lineup, 14 minutes. He contributed. But he's out. Draymond Green may be back on the way. He was reinstated by the NBA over the weekend. I think it was from Woj who also said that there's going to be like a week or so ramp up period for Draymond to get back into game shape before rejoining the team, rejoining the lineup. Draymond Green, as I was doing some prep this morning, got the tweet from Woj, has a new episode of the Draymond Green Show is out as of recording. And in one of the clips, one of the quotes from the episodes, Draymond saying he was close to retiring and Adam Silver talked him out of it. And the faces you are seeing from Steve is because these are his live reactions to this, because he has not seen this.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, dang. So, that man was upset.
That he was. But we hope Chris Paul gets back right soon. We hope Draymond Green is okay. Was very kind about Adam Silver. Noted that he appreciates the fact that Adam Silver is someone that is in the business of helping people versus just punishing them and throwing them away. And Adam Silver, in the conversation with Draymond, he said, I feel like you're just making a rash decision right now. Like, I'm not about to let you do that. Let's just calm down. Let's be actionable about this. So Draymond not retiring, apparently back in a week or so. Any broad thoughts about Golden State during the stretch as we've gotten the Chris Paul news, the Draymond Green update? We got leaks adjacent from the camps of Moses Moody and Jonathan Kuminga about playing time. There was like the grand opening, grand closing portion of Pascal Siakam talks with Sacramento, but Golden State roped into those with also the report of Golden State not being super willing to include Jonathan Kuminga in those talks. Where are we at with the Warriors? This just feels like a really, really weird season for them.
Well, lost in that is Jonathan Kuminga also got a haircut. So
certainly lost in that, yeah.
But anyway, the last time we talked on the pod about this, I was wondering, I asked you, hey, how do we feel about the timing of Draymond's return and what that means for the Warriors? And that was before all this happened. So in my head, I'm trying to figure out, okay, one, they're trying to win games. Two, they are trying to find it. And so you have a night where, hey, you actually started Kuminga and Wiggins together. But you also had a night where Steph shot 2 for 14 and the Raptors tried to attack him at every single time that they could. While Klay was like, hey, I'm making shots tonight, y'all. I got 25, 10 of 15, 5 threes. Hey,
and it's just help? Like,
can they balance these things? We've seen glimpses from all of the pieces that need to be good. We just rarely have seen it at the same time. So now you're going to have to figure out, is it the defense? Can we get our offense back in order and not be stagnant? How do we get Draymond back in as we're just now figuring out the rotation to get Kuminga and Moody back in because they're upset while we're also trying to figure out who can actually play together? And, oh, yeah, again, we have to win games because we're behind the eight ball. It's a lot at one moment, but I do think Draymond will stabilize some things. I think if they can settle into the pattern and feeling comfortable with Kuminga, with Moody, with Pods, TJD's giving them a lift and just sit in that for a little bit, I think they'll be all right as far as just being able to survive the storm. And then we can get to, okay, now how much good is here? But they're going to have to settle in during this portion.
Yeah, and this portion, again, as you mentioned, like they're behind in the standings right now. But then you throw in the added pressure of if you are trying to figure out how good is this group for a group that hasn't gotten to play a ton together because of just general rotation decisions or because, you know, Draymond has missed the last 12, 13 or so games and will miss a few more heading into next week. The trade deadline is February 8th. Like, it's going to have to be a quick ramp up and let's get our combinations together so we can figure out who is, for lack of a better way to phrase it right now, who is worth keeping on this roster heading into the true home stretch of the season. Because, you know, bad shooting night for Steph last night, but ultimately Steph has played at an all-NBA second team level conservatively. And you could argue up to first, but it's been a really strong guard class this year, just strong class period. But Steph has been incredible this season on balance. And so you don't want to go into full tilt, full, okay, let's just trade off all of these pieces and really just try to retool for next year. Because, like, if I'm Steph, I'm like, hey, so we're doing what now? Excuse me? So, like, there are a lot of competing desires here. Very important stretch for Golden State coming up.
I would circle that road trip they have. 4 games, Friday to Wednesday, Chicago, Milwaukee, Memphis, Utah. They got a big homestand after that. If they can find something on that road trip, maybe that can be a launch pad for them. But we'll probably get answers either way.
We'll keep a close eye on the Golden State Warriors because, buddy, very important stretch coming up. All right, let's tap into some rookies. Again, we have some new names that we're going to throw into the fray this time, but we did want to start with some updates. So not super long. We're not going to get like a 30-minute Wimby conversation like we did in Rookie Report 1. Like, I think Rookie Report 1 kind of laid the foundation of these are our early thoughts. These are the type of players these guys are right now. Here's some growth areas. So now it's just kind of tracking progress on the guys that we've already talked about. But we can start with Victor Wembanyama. All stats referenced, unless noted otherwise, will be from December 4th, which was the first rookie report. So about a month sample to see where everyone's at. But since then, Victor Wembanyama, 19.4 points, 53% on twos, 33% on threes, 76% from the line, nearly 11 rebounds per game, 3 assists, nearly 3 turnovers, a steal, and 4 blocks per game for Victor Wembanyama over the last month or so, in a shade under 28 minutes a game. And overall, he is leading the league in blocks per game, which is not typically something that rookies do. I've had a lot of fun watching Victor Wembanyama. What stood out for me, as I mentioned, the December 4th date. I would also like to highlight December 8th, because that is the day that Victor Wembanyama actually started at center, just flat out, versus like him and Zach Collins together, Zach Collins picking up fives and Wemby getting to roam around. Wemby has just been the starting five since December 8th, averaging 20, 11, and 3 with 4 blocks per game. True shooting percentage nearing 58. So right around the league average for him, which is a bump from the efficiency we saw earlier in the year for him. And buddy, you're starting to see, one, at a higher level, how terrifying he is defensively, as he is just now the primary rim protector. You've getting to see more of him in drop and the way that he's navigating that. You feel like you have a pull-up jumper. You don't really have that. You try to challenge him at the rim. He just has limbs everywhere. Not only is he swatting a bunch of shots, he's deterring people from even taking shots at the rim, which is a fun thing to see from a rookie on that end. So that part's been fun. And then offensively, just seeing the usage start to expand, like he's moved to the five, so he's being defended by more fives naturally, which is opening up more things for him in pick and roll, opening up more things for him as a driver, though Still waiting on the handle to tighten up even more, so those drives are a little bit more fruitful. Diggs can still bother him, things like that. The pick and pops, putting a little bit more strain on defenses when he is being defended by fives. I've loved the way that San Antonio has now sprinkled in more of the on-ball stuff with him. Really popped as we were hosting our watch party on Sunday. Again, tap into those online Dunker Spot watch parties, folks. We're having fun. But watching the Spurs-Cavs games from yesterday and watching Trey Jones screen for Wemby and watching him get downhill, I was like, oh, this is neat. And watching Wemby pass on the move as a pick-and-roll ball handler, like, oh, this is neat. Also, the guy's like 7'8". This shouldn't be happening. What is this? So that kind of encouraged me to look this up. See, how many pick-and-rolls has he ran since the last rookie report? It's just 28, which isn't a high number. But he's received an on-ball screen from someone in 12 of his last 13 games. So even if it isn't a heavy diet, it's still a steady diet, and they're sprinkling that in with some consistency. So I'm very excited to see how San Antonio continues to build on that. And then overall, with him getting downhill, 41% of his shots are coming at the rim. Since the shift to center, that was at 31% beforehand. So getting easier shots, that's also helping the efficiency. Very dull analysis here, but I have really enjoyed the Victor Wembanyama experience. He is one of the most fun prospects to come into the league in a very long time.
It's been very fun to watch and track the progress. As you mentioned last time on the last rookie report, we talked about defensively how the off-ball responsibilities are huge and how he's taken away portions of the floor. And of course, when he's at the five, it just pops in different ways. You know, you mentioned the fact that he's kind of baiting people when he's in that drop and just closing windows. Where, you know, in your mind, you're saying, hey, he's a little too far back on that drop. And then you realize, oh, he opened up to just let you have this lane. And now I'm just going to contest or take away that window. And I felt bad for poor Caris LeVert because he tested him one time. And then he was like, eh, I'm not going to do that again. That window is just not there. The Hezzy did not help me out. I think the biggest thing is just watching him mature on that end. You kind of see more of the, okay, multiple efforts can be there. He can get to the level. He can show help. I mean, you go back to that Cleveland game. They started out the game for a lob play for Donovan Mitchell. Wemby was guarding Jared Allen at the elbow and immediately sniffed it out and said, no, that's not happening. Literally went to go as the ball was being passed. And Donovan was like, well, let me get it back to Jared. But those kind of instincts are very fun to watch, and you kind of see it pop more for San Antonio. I think that the baiting can get him in trouble against some of the quicker guards, whether it's a Ja Morant or a Damian Lillard, where they have a little bit more experience as far as I can get in your body and get into you. But I think defensively, he's done a really good job of showing that help and recover aspect of his game. You mentioned the offense. The usage is fun. I just think you never know what you're going to get. You might see him bring it up in transition. He might be a screener. He might pick and pop. The off-ball actions they run for him where they've used they hit it at the elbow and now Wemby's in the corner flying off screens and back cutting. I think the cutting has been really fun. That's really intrigued me. I'll ask you a question real quick. Yeah, he got Giannis in a way that that's movement shooters do that. As far as let me back cut, come back off, back cut again. And then you realize that's a giant person doing that. I'll ask you one question. I don't want to hang too long. Mm. Shot selection or screening, which one would you like to see improve?
It is screening in five for me. Especially since he's at the five and can now just open more things up. And those aren't going to be auto switches for him to the same degree that it might have been when he's defending fours and the point guard being defended by bigger wings, et cetera. It's got to be the screening. Because I think that's going to help as he becomes a more threatening scorer and he's naturally just going to draw a bunch more attention. If he can also make his guards more of a threat, and this is where I think recently I brought up like the numbers with him and Devin Vassell as part of the New Year's resolutions. Like, I want to see more of that develop. I think part of that is going to be Wemby doing a better job of freeing Devin Vassell. Because as we've seen over this recent stretch, once Devin gets going with the pull-up, there isn't much you can do with him. He's not the burstiest of athletes, but he's really good at getting defenders off balance with his handle. So he can just flow into pull-ups, and now he's hitting you with hesitations, and now he's just gliding in for some of those scooping layups. It's a fun time. And if you're committing two to him, and now it's a swing back to Wemby on the pop, he's comfortable taking that shot. Or here's this incredibly large human who can drive and also sprinkle in passes on the move, which, again, I can't stress enough how fun of a development that is and how much fun I've had tracking the passing growth from him, even going back to, like, our Wemby streams before entering the league. But I think a lot of that is going to start with him being more physical, and I think some of that's just going to grow with him getting stronger, et cetera. But the technique has to get better. Like, you've tossed out the footwork as he's coming up to set screens through many watch parties he's brought up on the pod, and I'm echoing those sentiments. Like, that has to be better. Because once he gets better at that, like, two-man actions with Wimby are going to be incredibly difficult to deal with. Like, you can already see the glimpses of that now. If he nails the screening portion, hey, we're going to have a lot of fun. So I lean towards the screening. What would you say before we, I have one more thing than you.
No, you're good. I think it's probably just the screening, the positioning. He's got to get his footwork right, do his work early. I think that will open more things up. You can kind of see where, you know, a pick and roll just becomes an under for a team where there's no hit. They're able to, the big is able to stay at home. They're not able to engage. So I want to see what that looks like as that gets better, especially with this San Antonio team that is just, we don't want to contain Wimby. We don't want to contain this team into one box. We're going to let them play and figure out who they are and develop in that kind of manner. I want to see how that continues to go going forward. The shot selection for me, he's large and believes he can make them. He's going to take a few that, you know, hashtag question mark. And also when they run post-up sets for him, sometimes he's catching at the three-point line anyway.
I was about to say, he's getting knocked off the spot. Yeah, that's what kind of is what it is on that front. Oh, so a couple of quick things for me just to empty the notes before we move on to Chet Holmgren. Over Wimby's last five games, across six total for San Antonio, he's averaging 24, 8, and 3 and 4.4 blocks on near 67 true shooting. He's shooting 37% from three on six attempts. He's getting to the line nearly seven times a game and knocking those down. The offense has been really fun, and he's been doing that in 25 minutes per game because he's still on the minutes restriction following the ankle tweak.
That was going to be my thing. But four out of the last five games, you got 20 and four blocks in under a minute restriction. This feels like his his Angels year.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Tungsten arm on door. But yeah, he's doing the thing. And then just very quickly on the defense, which honestly, we're going to have to see where the minutes land and how many games he ultimately ends up playing. Like, obviously, you don't want to get hurt, but San Antonio is showing early on, if something does happen, we are slow playing this. We do not want to rush this season one with you. So we'll keep an eye on if he ends up playing 65 games or not. But he does legit have an all defense case already as a rookie, which taking me back to like the Evan Mobley year. Like, I love when rookies show that kind of impact early. Evan Mobley, Herb Jones, et cetera. I love when rookies have that kind of immediate impact. I already mentioned the blocks per game, which is wild enough. Opponent shooting, I think 51.6% at the rim against him. And among a large list of players that have defended at least 100 shots, like, that is a top 10 mark for Wimby. Funny enough, you know who he's tied with in field goal percentage allowed at the rim?
Who?
Chet Holmgren.
Ah, of course.
So that's a fun one, as we talked about Chet with all defense as well. So again, it's fun to watch the rookies have that kind of early impact. But here's the fun one for me. The Spurs with a 116.3 defensive rating with Wimby on the court per clean the glass that filters out garbage time. That would be tied with Dallas for 17. So average, slightly below average. With him off the floor, that jumps to 124.3, which is nearly a full point worse than the 30th ranked Washington Wizards. The defense is over 8 points better with him on the floor. He has the blocks. He has the general rim deterrence. And the impact is there. Like, there's a case to be made if he stays healthy. So I just wanted to quickly throw that out there. Any closing thoughts on Wimby before we move to Chet?
This is quite the turnaround from when I asked you, are you ready for Wimby all defense?
I wasn't ready for Wimby defensive player of the year. And like, I still can't get all the way there. But all defense, yeah, I think it's easier to sell top 10 versus the best defender in basketball as a rookie.
It's going to be interesting to see how people balance the eye test and what they see against, hey, yes, you guys are better defensively with you on the court, but you guys aren't very good. So,
yeah, like 17 still ain't good, but like from 17 to 30th with a bullet is kind of it's kind of tough. But yeah, it's going to be fun to monitor. But all right, let's move to Chet Holmgren, former number two overall pick, because I messed that up on the last pod. My apologies. But since December 4th, 17.2 points per game, 64% on twos, 40% from three, 76% from the line, nearly seven rebounds per game, 2.6 assists to 1.6 turnovers, which is interesting, 3.1 blocks per game, which would be a top mark since that date if Wimby didn't exist, which brings me back to the Wimby cult, where it's like, yeah, he'd be number one if I didn't exist. What a bar from Wimby. Anyway, but for Chet Holmgren, for me, the defense remains fun. The pick and pop slash pick and roll variability that he has is also fun. The drives continue to be fun with Chet, and he's getting even more comfortable attacking the basket. Just him being a five that can space, draws big defenders out, he's able to attack from there. He's self-creating more. I'll quickly look this up before the pod. I was like, it feels like he's creating more of his own shots. It's not just the straight line drives against tilted defenses. Sometimes you want to go into delay action with him, and he's like, actually, no, I can just go, actually. This guy in front of me just cannot guard me. So before December 4th, about 32% of his twos were unassisted. Since then, slash since the last rookie report, that is up to 39.5%. Nearly 40% of his twos are unassisted. That's generally not a center mark, especially a center that is playing with an MVP candidate. So the fact that he is getting this kind of usage and growing with it and still remaining very efficient, again, since December 4th, 117 drives, which more than Jimmy Butler, we have the games played stuff. But like the fact that you can say Chet Holmgren has driven the basketball more than Jimmy Butler over the last month is insane because centers generally aren't supposed to be at that number. Like 117 is a full season mark for your traditional big man. And he's at that over last month. Anyway, 1.13 points per possession on any trip featuring a Chet drive over the last month remains a very high level mark there. So the drives have been fun, looking more comfortable as a self-creator. One thing I wanted to ask you about before you get into your notes. With Chet defensively, I think it's fair to say he is a ridiculous interior defender. And because of the length and the mobility, he's more comfortable than most defending on the perimeter. But how do you feel about his perimeter defense right now, just as a whole?
I feel fine. It's less about pure one-on-one and more the fact that he can do his job. He can contain. OKC is going to help him if he does get beat. And he doesn't feel out of place with the off-ball rotations to a massive degree, to where you feel like this is not something that's sustainable or something we can do.
I wanted to peep there. Like as I was looking at like drive stuff yesterday and then this morning, over 1.3 points per possession allowed on possessions featuring a drive against Chet, which is not a very good number. And then going through some of those, it's like I was with you. Like it didn't feel like he was awful, but you can kind of see guys getting inside leverage. I don't know how much to ding a rookie center for being beat off the dribble by guards. But like looking at the two Nets games in particular, it felt like they felt very comfortable driving against them. It's like, okay, with OKC now having these heightened expectations, like this seems very friendly, not just like a playoff team, but a home court team. Is that something that teams could maybe pick at within a playoff context? Not that it should be like a red flag on Chet's career or anything like that, but just kind of monitoring where he is as of January 8th. Is that something that creeps to the back of your mind at all?
I mean, I guess it depends. I think that becomes a concern if a team downsizes their lineup to be able to play better defensively. And also you have to nail this portion of the program against this guy, you know, not the Rudy Gobert package, but we can tap that button and maybe bring you closer to the liability zone. I think in a regular context, if he's just a five and he's defending fives, I don't necessarily have the same issue because the volume is going to be lower. But if we're talking playoffs and this is a team that says, you know, we go Brooklyn-esque and we go smaller and we feel comfortable with the person that can guard you and you not being able to guard them, it's always Dorian Finney-Smith, isn't it?
Well, we have found our audio version of the pod title. That's a great shot. But anyway, any general chat notes for you or updates rather?
The blend is still really fun for me. You know, if you have a guy who shoots 72% in the restricted area, 40% on above the rate threes, that's fun. It's always the sequences for me and how he really keeps pressure on defenses. And I go back to when they played at Denver. And you have the moment in the first quarter early, Chet takes and makes a trail three in transition while he's spaced. Then it's a pick and pop with Williams where Jokic wasn't a drop and now has to close hard because Chet had just made that three. Now he drives and finishes. Then he screens for Shea. Jokic is in a drop thinking, hey, I got to contain this. I got to recover. Now Chet rolls and he finishes. And just like that, he's scored in three different spots and he's made you think about what's coming next. I think that's an underrated part of his game. I feel like his timing and feel is underrated. I think it's easy to talk about how good of a fit he is with OKC because of his ability to hit threes, because of his ability to drive, because of the defense and how he elevates them on that end. I think his cutting is really fun. I think the way that he reads the floor, the way he clears different areas, the timing on his relocations, There are possessions where he may start in the corner, he may rise to the wing, he may dive back to the block, and he also becomes a little bit of a moving target that way. And so you mix in some of the times where Chet has brought it up or is involved with a guard screening for him, which is important because OKC loves their guard screening on the ball. And boy, now you can tap, you can tap into him playing in those kind of actions and passing and cutting out of that. So by mine, I'm thinking, like, if you're defending Chet, right, you're defending him in transition as a big, and he runs to the wing, you're helping because that's your natural instinct, but, oh, wait, he's on the wing, he can shoot. Oh, no, he relocated to the corner. Oh, let me drive out. He might actually, let me close out. He might actually shoot this. Oh, he's driven by me. That's the fun stuff for me. Like, just watching, if you watch OKC, watch where Chet starts on a possession, and as they keep moving, that's where it gets really fun. Like, even if he starts in the corner, he comes to set a screen, which is a fun trick that OKC likes to do. Like, we're running pick and roll, but it's, we're not just like, we're going to sprint from the corner, and now all of a sudden I can choose my angle based on where my defender is, or I can find a way to slip into space. Those little things, like just the ways that he can punish teams. You want a late switch? That's your idea to counter Shea? Well, in this opportunity, I'm just going to go ahead and drive and shoot over your guard. And now you don't want to do that again, do you?
Mm-hmm.
That helps.
Got you. I got you. A very quick chat question for you. And it's okay if you don't have one off the top of your head. Do you have a Chet comp? I don't think this is anything I've asked you before.
A Chet comp? What do you mean?
Yeah. I guess just who does he remind you? Because, like, I think early on, you can see, like, the shades of Kristaps type beat. But, like, he doesn't feel like he's in that box because of how comfortable he is with the ball in his hands.
I mean, you're not going to like it, but probably the vision that everyone had of Kristaps back then.
Okay.
Are you leaning him more towards Anthony Davis? Is that what you're telling me?
I don't know. And I guess that's why I also wanted to pick your brain about it, because I'm just like, this dude isn't...
I don't know, he's like, just Chet.
He is just Chet. Like, that's the actual answer. But I want to know if he reminds you of anyone else. Like, I've seen... You mentioned Brow, which is funny, because, like, I've seen Brow. Obviously, we've seen Kristaps. I wish I could remember who it was that brought up KG as a comp. And I was like, that seems rich. But, like, also, I see how you kind of get in there with, like, just the loose outline of what KG was and the multiple ways that he could be used. So I was like, huh, let me ask Steve, as someone who has more basketball experience than I do. Let me see what he thinks. But any closing thoughts on Chet?
Well, I got a question for you.
Okay.
You mentioned the defense, right? So what archetype are you more worried about with Chet? The traditional post-up big that could potentially overpower him? The point guard that could put pressure on him in pick and roll, or the wing defender that could cause chaos on both ends?
For me, I probably lean towards the wing defender on both ends. And, like, I think that's why watching the Boston game in particular was interesting for me, in addition to them just being two really good teams. I want to see who they placed on Chet and, like, what they would do to, like, the Chet-Shea pick and rolls and how they would handle that. Because that, not everyone has Boston's personnel, which is why Boston is one of the best teams in the league. But in theory, okay, we feel comfortable about this guy defending Shea, or as comfortable as we can. We will put center on Josh Giddey. We will put center on, you don't really want to do that against Jalen Williams because of how comfortable he is with the ball in his hands. But, like, in theory, if you want to just commit to, we want wing on Chet so we can switch this and we want to bog y'all down and then show help from there, like, you can put center on Jalen. And so I just want to see, like, that's probably what's at the back of my mind when it comes to Chet and that end. And then to the other end, okay, how well is he navigating drives? And not just the straight line stuff, because I think he has the length that he'll just get better at that. It's what happens when Chet is spaced and then someone sets, like, a pin in on him, and then he has to navigate that and then close out and then contain the drive, which is also something that, like, Brooklyn was able to sprinkle in. It's like, okay, I don't want to ding him too hard because, one, he's a rookie, two, he is a big, and bigs aren't supposed to be good at that stuff. But if this team is going places, and then you throw in the fact that if Chet's on the perimeter and this OKC team already isn't a good rebounding one, and now you're pulling him away from the rim on top of that, like, what is the multiplying effect to that? And, like, how well can he navigate that? So that's kind of where my mind was going with that. But if we don't have any more Chet thoughts, who's been incredible, we can slide to Brandon Miller very quickly since December 4th. 15.1 points per game, 39% on twos, not great. 39% from three, very good. 86% from the line, 3.5 boards, 2.4 assists, 2.2 turnovers, so almost 1-to-1 there. Nearly a steal per game. I'll go very quickly on the Brandon Miller front. I continue to enjoy him off the ball. Like, the shooting obviously pops. He does not care about contest at all. But more than that, like, I just love how he reads the floor. Knowing how deep he needs to space in the corner, if he's on the wing, how high up he needs to be. When his guy drives, okay, let me not jet to the corner. Let me not jet all the way above the break and remove myself from my driver's line of sight. Let me just take a subtle step here. Let me throw in a juke and then get to where I really want to go. He's just really good at finding that space and also having the appropriate pacing for when he wants to get to those spots so he can always be available. And so you'll see that on some of the swings from Charlotte and the ball finds him, or even if he relocates and the shot's taken and is missed, after an offensive rebound, he's so far away from where his defender was because of the movement. He did his work early. Now he's rewarded with one of those wide open threes off of an offensive rebound. So, like, I've continued to enjoy that portion. And then the only other thing I wanted to bring up with him is continuing to monitor the drives. Objectively, a good thing that he is driving more and getting downhill more. Per second spectrum, he was at about roughly 9 drives per 100 possessions through December the 3rd. That is up to 13.3. So just a very solid leap in the driving aggression from him. The efficiency, not very good for him right now. I think he's still trying to parse through how to finish over guys and in general, just what types of shots he wants to take and what kind of reads he wants to make from there. And I know we talked about this recently, so I want to pass this off to you so you can educate our YouTube watchers, et cetera. But those are my two general thoughts with Brandon Miller. Other than that, like, continues to compete on defense, getting more on-ball reps, especially in light of some of the injuries that Charlotte's dealt with. But just tracking the drives and seeing how much more comfortable he gets with that is going to be important. But that's where I am with Brandon. What say you?
Well, just bouncing off that with the drives, I do like his mindset. When he wants to, he's going to work to get in the paint. He's shown a good first step. And, you know, with that size, with the length, with the strides, he can get in the paint. That's really important, especially as the scouting report is going to get updated where, hey, he's knocking down shots. He's a shooter. We don't want to let him get loose. As you watch Brandon Miller tape, you can see different teams reacting differently to him when he's spaced. I think we were watching a Denver game and Nikola Jokic was like, hey, whoa, not you.
Not him.
No. I'm like, okay, the shooting is really prospering and that's good. He shot 42.5% from three in the month of December. Back to the drives, though. For me, it still feels like sometimes once he gets in that paint, it's shooting time. It's shooting time. It's going up. And that's where I want to see, yeah, how do we progress that to where it doesn't feel like it's a 2K animation or I have to get one up because I got in here. I would like to see how that grows and develops, because whether it's off a closeout or in pick and roll or even on a broken play, you can tell that he's gearing up to let it fly, even if a shot isn't there. And he's got the size and length to be able to get one off, but that's where you want to see him find the gaps, because there's sometimes where he gets that penetration and there's a kick there. Mm-hmm. But if you're always thinking shoot, 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 you miss some of those opportunities. And then you combine that with some of the pick and rolls where he's got great pace. He's got great tempo on pick and roll. He knows how to attack space. If he's on the side, does he over-penetrate and miss the window? Does he predetermine his read? If a team decides, you know what, we're going to be at the level, is he ready to handle that responsibility of, I need to come off this screen, get to, and now create advantage for my team? That's stuff that he'll grow into. But if we're talking drives, those are probably my concerns. But the shooting is the shooting. I think the catch and shoot obviously is huge. You don't need me to break that down for you. But I do like that he is mixing in more of those drives against those closeouts to where it's not just, I'm going to let it fly from three automatically. No, I can shot fake and drive, get to my pull-up. I like the pull-up. He's got a really solid base as far as his footwork goes. And you could tell with more reps, he's understanding where his shots are, the shots he knows he can get to. Pick and roll, you're going to drop, I can get right to my spot. Handoffs, I can get right to my spot. I think you can see when he's off ball still is the most comfort. When he's in movement is the most comfort. When he's able to set his man up and come off for a screen, he knows the space. He can get right to his shot. That's the fun stuff for Brandon Miller. Back to the drives, Nikias.
Okay.
I did have a number to illustrate my point. Let's all throw a party. So 6.8 drives per game, right?
Mm-hmm.
25% of those end up with a pass.
Ah, I see. It is indeed time to hoop it up. Brandon Miller gets out. Which, I mean, some of that is just going to be like the context being baked in, right? Where it's like, well, they're helping off of this guy for a reason. I don't really want to do that. Also, hey, no LaMelo, no Gordon Hayward, depending on which games you've been watching over this recent stretch, like you've either had Terry Rozier or you haven't had him, or he's just been on the bench during some of these minutes. Some of this is just him enhancing the mindset like, okay, I do have to take some of these. I do have to grow into this because ultimately, if we're looking at year three, year four, year five, Brandon Miller, if you're Charlotte, the high end is going to be what? Like they'll be averaging 21, 22 a game, 22, 5, and 5 or something like that. Is kind of where you want that trend to go on the high end or the moderately high end, depending on how high you were on Brandon Miller. This is a lot of high. But anyway, so like I understand wanting him to be more of a scorer in that regard. Don't do this to me. Don't do this to me. I know where you're going. Don't do this to me. It's not what I meant. But but yeah, he is going to have to parse through that decision making as a driver. So it's going to be interesting to watch that unfold. Any closing sober Brandon Miller thoughts, I suppose? We're just going to lean into the bit.
Let's go ahead, Boogie.
Well, appropriately, let's head to Portland. Let's talk about Scoot Anderson. Over the last month and some change, averaging 14.3 points per game, 40% on twos, not great. We're going to talk about it. 37% from three, like 36.5%, rounds up 37. 81% from the line, three boards, nearly six assists to three turnovers, about half a steal per game. First and foremost, the passing from Scoot Henderson is very fun to me. I love the pass that he throws. I love the windows that he tries to hit, which factors into some of the turnover stuff, but like I don't super mind that. Like I am cool with rookie guard sees small window and tries to hit it. Because the fact that you can see it is a positive for me. Now, once it's proven that you can't and we get into that year three and it's just a turnover issue, like that changes the math for me. But early on, like I'm glad that he is exploring. Really good at finding his bigs. He's not uncomfortable throwing skips. So that part is fun for me. The drives continue to grow comfort and changing pace. We know how fast he can be in the open floor. We know how fast he can be in the half court. But it seems it's getting better figuring out, okay, I can just kind of come off here slowly, kind of read what's happening and then flow into something. And then here it's like, oh, I just have a gap. I'm chewing up all this space. Let's have some fun. So that the general pacing for him continued to grow. Over the last month, 0.97 points per possession on any trip featuring a Scoot Henderson drive, which isn't a great number. But once you consider where it was before December 4th, 0.89 points per possession, that is a pretty solid leap. You factor in, again, the injury, missing time, ramping back up, all that stuff. So the fact that it's trending up in that way within the context that he's had seems like a positive to me. Would not surprise me if when we do the rookie report again in February, if it's not above a point per possession, that is solid progress. So continue to track that. Last couple of things I want to hit on before I toss it to you when it comes to Scoot. Inside the arc, like I mentioned, the pacing. But just monitoring the footwork when he's flowing into some of these pull-up twos and when he's flowing into those floaters. Just over the last month or so, 36% on floaters and two-point jumpers. That is not a great number. It's nice that he is starting to seek out that shot a little bit more. And you're definitely seeing him seek out just to catch shoot threes and some of the pull-ups against unders. But the footwork on the pull-ups and floaters can get a little bit wonky when he does speed up some. That was something that we were talking through during one of our random watch parties. Just going through clips there. So that's something to work out. And then off the ball is not just going to be the shooting for me. He needs to know where to space and how quickly he needs to get there. He can't just be off ball and just kind of lounge around and cramp spacing when other guys are trying to cut through and stuff. So, like, that's something I'm keeping an eye on. But those are the early updated Scoot thoughts. What say you, good sir?
I mean, for me, it's just how do you analyze Scoot Henderson? Because you have that start, but Nikias, There is one rookie in the league that has 20-point and 10-assist game. Do you know who it is?
I would imagine that it's Scoot Henderson.
It's Scoot, and he's done it twice. 22-11 against the Spurs, 23-10 against the Jazz. So it's been fun to watch some of the improvement from Scoot, even if the box scores don't always match the energy. I feel a lot better about his tempo as far as how he's changing speeds and as far as how he's attacking defenses. It's less full-time turbo button. It's more hesitation. It's more changing speeds. It's more knowing when he needs to get to that turbo button. It does feel like more paint touches. You mentioned the drive numbers. He's able to get 10 drives a night for Portland. That's really important for that team, especially with their current context. For me, I guess it's what's the next step and what does that unlock? Because we've seen the progress as far as once he slows down, oh, he can make the reads. He can see the plays. He sees where the shot is. What does he do to build on top of that? So you mentioned the footwork. Okay, he's come off with enough tempo to where he can see the biggest drop back. He can see their space for that shot. Is he comfortable taking that pull-up? Is his footwork going to be okay so he can take one dribble and bounce right up into it? Or does he have to load up and set up for that? Because he has to load up and set up for that, does he feel more comfortable taking another dribble and going for a floater?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that looks smoother. But if he's not making that floater, what do we have? Where's the rhythm there?
Mm-hmm.
How does he balance going to the pull-up versus going to the floater? Being able to get downhill and hit that turbo button is great and fantastic. And you drive hard, you get in the paint. Are you finishing through contact? At this stage, probably not getting a ton of foul calls. So what contact are you initiating? How are you finishing through that? Can you improve those numbers? And if one of those tweaks happen, what does that open up for you?
Mm-hmm.
That's where I'm trying to figure out, okay, what's going to be the progress and improvement in that area for Scoot?
Okay, makes sense. Before we move from Scoot, any defense thoughts for him so far? I've generally, for me, like I've enjoyed the effort and like watching, especially within the earlier context when Portland was just switching a ton before they dealt with even more injuries. Like watching him scram out, was like, okay, this is better than I would expect from rookie guard. And seeing him try to battle in front against bigger guys, like, okay. Like, Scoot is a strong guard for someone his age. Like, okay, this part is neat. And as we get into some of the screen navigation stuff, it's like half the time, oh, this is neat, cool, he's reattaching, he's not two-handed, this is dope. Other times, it's like you're not really doing your prep work early, and now you're getting slammed into the screen, and now you're trying to recover, and like you don't have the most length to get those review contests, so it's been hit or miss. But do you have any early Scoot defense thoughts?
So he's a young rookie guard?
He is indeed a young rookie guard.
With uneven play on and off ball?
That would track. That would track.
Yeah. Breaking. News at 10.
Yeah. All right. Well, I figured I'd ask, friend. I figured I would ask. All right. Let's go to Detroit. Let's go to Detroit. Let's go to Asar Thompson, who's averaging 6 points per game. 56% on twos. That's good. 17% from three. Not so great. 67% from the line. Four boards. 1.6 steals. 0.6 steals. 0.5 blocks over the last month or so. So for Asar, again, it's kind of stunk to see the minutes drop for him and find himself out of rotation and then back into the rotation. But I've enjoyed some of the usage that we're seeing from him. He does seem a little bit more comfortable as a driver, which is a nice little micro improvement within the context change for him. Also, Monty Williams, he noted, I think it was early December, like, hey, we could probably use him more as a screener. They have done that, and they've gotten good stuff out of it. 50 on-ball picks since December 4th. 1.25 points per possession on trips featuring an Asar Thompson on-ball screen, which is very cool. Like, half of those are being switched, but it does open up some interesting slip opportunities for him, and his footwork is good on that. He gets out of there early, opens up some early lobs, depending on what the spacing is like. They flow out of horns a lot when they do want to use Asar as a screener. And there's one comment, like, they'll run it. A lot of teams in the league run it, but they'll flow out of horns. It'd be kind of like the cross screen to get up to the wing type look. But I saw a screen for a big, that big will go get a shooter, normally Boyan or someone in the corner. And while that's happening and occupying defenders on that side, then it's just a step-up ball screen for Asar. He slips out of there. And if that corner is empty, now it's just a lob opportunity for him. And so, like, watching them run that against Brooklyn, they ran it against Milwaukee. I'm like, okay, they're at least trying some different things, even if they aren't just giving him 30 minutes a night to try to explore and stuff. So, like, I appreciate that portion of the program with Asar. Also, turnovers are down. Only three multi-turnover games since December 4th, so that's progress. Like, some of that is just a minute load, but also, again, does seem more controlled as a driver. Handle seems tighter. There are some possessions I feel like he's kind of taking a dribble and then passing it, versus really exploring what he can get there and trying to bend the defense. But I guess you just got to mix that in versus some of the super early aggression we saw when the turnovers were high. So he's still trying to find a balance there. Any updated Asar thoughts or anything that's popped for you over the last month?
It's the potential with the drives that really stands out to me, especially when he's able to understand what he wants to get to when he has the ball in his hands. I think that he has the athleticism. He can hesitate and go. He's not afraid to initiate contact. You really feel it in transition when he can push or run in the floor. I think it's interesting to see kind of the adjustment to where, yes, teams are helping off of Asar. Yes, he's probably going to get the kick. He's also mixing in some closeouts. I mean, mixing in some drives against the closeouts. If you close short when teams are helping off him, and I want to see how much more he can get to that, to where, you know what, I don't have to default just to catch and shoot. Let me see if I can still get a paint touch out of this and at least keep an advantage going for our team. The other thing I'm keeping an eye on that I've been intrigued by, just the timing on the cuts. If teams are going to continue to help off of him to this degree, can he find the gaps? Can he find the timing, whether it's backdoor from the corner or maybe a quick dive from the wing if he's spaced there? Is that another way that he can be a threat? I'm glad you mentioned the screening, because I am intrigued by it. I guess for me, it's like, how many lineups can Detroit really throw out there where they can get to it? But it's definitely something they should keep in the back pocket. You know, if I'm Detroit, I'm probably looking to continue to develop him. But how do we find different ways to make him a threat to where he can impact defenses and open things up for us? I think as a screener is a big one. He's got really natural footwork when he screens and rolls and gets into that pocket, so it's fun. I'm having a weird dynamic, because since December, I believe he's 4-for-27 from three. But I like the fact that he's still looking to go right up with those catch and shoot threes. Sometimes the result may not be great, but you need the confidence to be able to still take them. So I'm fine with that. Defensively, great activity. Mm-hmm. Flies around. The one thing I do want to keep an eye on, ball watching sometimes. Closeouts can get wonky sometimes. Very rare. Very nitpicky for me right now, but he's got a great feel defensively as far as having that combination of being active on ball, being in the right spot off ball to help, and being able to recover. So two thumbs up.
Okay, good stuff, good stuff. Like, definitely worth, like, I don't know, that's going to be a fun bounce for him to find defensively, because obviously he wants to create havoc all over the floor, and so he certainly can't fall into that loop of just eyeing things. So it's going to be worth noting. Especially with some of the quicker hooks that he's gotten in terms of playing time, he's definitely going to have to nail that portion of it. But we'll continue to monitor it. While we're on an athletic defensive wing that's having a lot of fun on that end, let's go to Washington very quickly. Bilal Coulibaly, averaging 8.8 points over the last month or so, 54% on twos, 35% on threes, 59% from the line on super low volume, but you still want the number to be up. 4.6 rebounds, 1.6 assists, nearly a steal and a block per contest. For me with Bilal, when we talked about him the first time, I mentioned the intrigue that I had with the drives. And with some of the on-ball reps he was getting, like, okay, he's getting dropped. Let's see how he's able to carve out that space. Let's see what the drives look like, et cetera, et cetera. And I mentioned, I think, towards the end of the commentary, I want to see what happens when teams start to sit on some of the moves on the drives and in general, like, when the scouting report updates on them. Buddy, before December 4th, teams were switching around 33% of his pick and rolls. Since then, that is up to 52%. He is not seeing the same windows when he's in ball screens now. Teams are kind of keyed in, though. Okay, like, he's shooting fine from three, but like, they ain't really his back like that. We want to take away these drives, we want to keep him in front. So watching him navigate that, it's been encouraging to me to see him get more comfortable just taking pull-up threes. It's not anything of like the Trey variety or something like that, but it is very much screen. You duck under. Oh, cool. This is space. Let me just stop right here and take the shot. It's nice to see him knock those down or just in general take those shots within rhythm. The drives do remain fun. The pick and roll volume has perked up from him overall, slightly so. So continue to watch that. And then defensively, again, he remains a monster when he's at the nail. Like, you can't get away from all those limbs. He makes some fun reads off the ball, both as of like a weak side rim protector. And also someone that can just play the passing lanes there. So I'm going to continue to enjoy the defensive portion. And like, one thing that I meant to bring up on the initial rookie report with him, and then we end up, I think, talking about either post pod or during a watch party, was with him defensively and navigating screen. Like, he's generally good at it, But I feel like because he isn't the strongest dude yet, he'll like navigate a screen and then try to reattach to the driver. And that driver is able to just wield him off or immediately draw a foul because he's trying to lean in and reattach. And he's not strong enough to just ride that drive out. Is that something that taught for you, or am I just going like super galaxy brain on something like that? Is that anything worth monitoring moving forward?
I don't think you're going super galaxy brain. I think that's just part of repetitions and part of getting stronger and understanding, okay, how much room do I really have as far as riding this drive or being able to use my length on this drive? So I don't think it's galaxy braining it. I think it's part of the package. I think the other thing is the context for the Wizards defensively. He's going to feel a few more of those, especially with some of the matchups that he has to take on, especially with the way that he helps and recovers. So I don't think it's the worst thing in the world at all. I think the fact is that he's taking on some of these challenges to where he's guarding, you know, the Damian Lillards, the Donovan Mitchells of the world, and holding his own to where, hey, that screen might not work on me. I'm staying in front on all your moves. And feeling like he's holding his own. I think the overall sense for me with Bilal is just comfort. He feels comfortable when he's out there. He doesn't feel like it's forced on either end of the floor, which feels interesting because of what you may think of Washington defensively and what you may forget how good they kind of are offensively as far as at least putting the ball in the basket multiple times in a game. I think for me, offensively, not afraid to shoot it from deep. You mentioned as far as defenses changing their coverage. That's a compliment as far as, hey, you know what? Not as much as that from you. We'd like to not do that. I think some of the drives have stood out to me, but it's the fact that you can see him build and keep putting things together, whether it's a shot fake and a drive. Oh, that's nice. I like that. Come off pick and roll or a handoff, stop and pop from three, adding some movement to it. I think my eyes at least have opened to some of the passing ability that he has, yes. Especially if he's in the corner and he's able to drive and you see him spray one out to the weak side. And it's like, oh, that's fun. I think that's been my overall deal with Bilal. He's not a finished product by far, but I do think he's ahead of where a lot of people had him at schedule-wise. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that he can mix in these shots, he can play defense, he's added in the playmaking, he's got the driving ability. He's not afraid to get off the ball and make those type of plays. You got a pretty strong foundation. I mean, shoot, honestly, my mind goes to some of the timing on those weak side defensive plays where all of a sudden, you know what, I'm spaced. I see this coming. Let me get there and help, or let me get this block. I mean, there's only four rookies with 20 steals and 20 or more blocks. We already talked about three of them. This is the fourth.
There you go. And Stats Jones Jr. has left the building. We love to see it. But no, Bilal's been a lot of fun. You didn't like that one, huh? Okay, we'll work on it. We'll workshop it. Give me a suggestion in the chat. Stat Jones Jr. ain't going to do it. Going to need something creative. All right, let's get to Dallas very quickly before we get into some of these new guys. Derek Lively, over the last month, 8.9 points per game. Nearly 73% of his twos have been converted. Free throws, we're not going to talk about it. That's been great, but the volume's low anyway. Anyway, 7.3 boards, over 2 offensive rebounds per game in that stretch, 1.3 assists to 1.2 turnovers, so a slight positive there, over a block per game for Derek Lively. I mostly wanted to give this to you because I know you have been very high on the continued growth of Derek Lively, particularly on the offensive end. Defensively, just wanted to kind of note, at least statistically, just what he's being asked to do in Dallas is being spread out a little bit more. He's blitzing more pick and rolls, switch numbers have dropped a little bit, but he's still having to execute multiple coverages. That's something that we talked about in Rookie Report 1. So you can hang there. In terms of points per possession allowed, with pick and rolls being defended by Derek Lively, 1.01 points per possession before December 4th, 0.91 points per possession since then. That is pretty darn good. It is both impressive that Derek Lively has been able to hold his own defensively, and also a bit concerning within the broader context of Dallas that he is as important as he is to this team already, because so many things just fall off of a cliff on both ends when he is not on the floor. So I've been impressed with that portion. And actually, I'll end it there. What has impressed you with Derek Lively over the past month or so?
Well, number one, before I go to that, based on feedback from the Cutters and Roamers from our first Rookie Report, I am obligated to say this. Against Oklahoma City, Derek Lively had 20 points, 16 rebounds, and 7 blocks. Against the San Antonio Spurs, Derek Lively had 16 points and 10 rebounds. There you go. It's been about the fit for me. It's been about building on the fit. And I'm glad you mentioned and started with the defense, because his ability to execute multiple schemes really adds value to this Dallas team and helps them build a base on both ends of the floor. I think that's really important, to where when you talk about rookie of the year, you could mention Lively as number three because of just the impact that he has for that team on both ends of the floor. Not even on ball, just the timing that he's developed off ball as far as showing help defensively. For me, I go back to the offense, though, and it just the work that he has done as a young big in pick and roll or handoffs has been fun. The ways that he gets to his roles, the ways that he opens pockets up, I don't want to use the gravity word, but he makes himself a threat out there on the court. He makes himself available. When you watch Dallas, watch his footwork. Watch the way that he gets out and explodes into that pocket. Even when he slips, he sets it up the same way. So teams over and over have to fight over, which is not the point of a slip. We're not supposed to have two on the ball in this scenario. And this man is jetting down the lane. The bigger build on that, obviously we know he can roll. We know Luka likes to throw it to him. That's part of their chemistry. The short roll decision-making has grown. And because you put that all together, if you show early help because you know he's looking to roll, you know they're looking to hit him, look at what he does when he catches it. He's surveying the floor. He can kick to get a shot or keep the advantage going for Dallas, both important things for their offensive philosophy. It's a big key for him to be able to nail that portion because of the pressure that Luka and or Kyrie puts on teams, to where we're going to try and take this away at some point. You're going to have an advantage. Can you play out of it? If you don't, he's going to finish that roll, or they're going to get that late lob. You know that's there. But to have that kind of trait to survey the floor as a young big, actually a big in general, is really good. The other portion of it, they don't do it as much as I personally would like, but when they mix in some of the elbow action and they get it to Lively, he has made some nice passes as far as being able to hit cutters. So I would just keep an eye on that. If can they lean into that? Does he become a little bit, I don't want to say a hub, but someone they can lean on with their movement sets. But the work that he's doing now is building a good foundation for Dallas's playoff run.
Got you. And on the short roll front, there's one number I want to drop, and there's some fun with filtering with Second Spectrum. If you just look at Derek Lively in a short roll, like, it's hard to kind of just replicate that with filters. So you can look at how often, like, the pick and roll being screened by him is getting blitzed, et cetera, et cetera. But you look at that blitz number with pick and rolls involved with Derek Lively, it's 0.76 points per possession, which is awful. And it's like, wait a minute, that doesn't match, et cetera, et cetera. But a lot of that number is Lively screens for Luka. Luka draws two. Instead of passing it to Lively, Luka skips it to the corner. And that guy is normally going to be a Grant Williams, who can knock down shots for teams okay helping off of. Or Derrick Jones Jr., who has knocked down shots this year, et cetera. You've seen a lot of missed threes there, and that brings the overall number down. If you filter to just Luka gets blitzed, or whoever the ball handler is gets blitzed, Derek Lively receives the pass, and then he does something on there, it's at 1 point per possession, 1 point per possession, which is a solid number, especially for a rookie big that wasn't known for that portion of it heading into the league, and continue to mix that in with, as you said, getting more aggressive as a finisher, being able to convert those looks. It is positive growth for Derek Lively. One last update, and he's only last because of just the draft slot. As you noticed, we went basically in draft order. Jaime Jaquez Jr., averaging nearly 16 points per game, was your rookie of the month, along with Chet Holmgren in the West Side for December. The 16 points per game, nearly 4 boards, nearly 3 assists, over a steal per game, 56% on twos, 28% on threes. We're starting to see the dip. How much of that is just shooting randomness? How much of that is increased role? How much of that is season just getting longer, etc.? We'll see where the shot normalizes for Jaime. But only thing I really want to note with Jaime, who continues to play well overall, is what he's doing as a driver and also what he means to this Heat offense, just in terms of their transition flow. As someone that can grab and go, or someone that can get an outlet and get downhill immediately. He is not scared. He puts a level of immediate pressure on defenses that they have been missing throughout the history of this podcast. I've talked about Miami's lack of rim pressure aside from Jimmy Butler consistently. And even then, it depends on the nights Jimmy wants to shoot during the regular season, at least. And so having Jaime, who, as we talked about during the first rookie report, has been one of the most effective post options in the league this year. You can sprinkle that into the half court. He's comfortable getting downhill and either taking shots or making the next pass, you know, generating paint touch when attacking the scrambling defense. And now you add in the transition value add there as someone that can grab and go, or again, receive an outlet and put pressure on defense. I think it's very important. The craft on the block is still there. Defensively, being more challenged, I think, as the season's gone on, it's like, okay, let's see what this rookie can actually do. And so that part's been hit or miss. I think it's worth, even if it's not on this pod, maybe it's the next rookie report, it's worth discussing. Hey, is the defense playoff ready enough for him as the team hopefully gets healthier, whatever version of healthy Miami is, as we know how that generally goes for them. But the fact that he's even in that conversation speaks to how well he's played this year, that he's pretty firmly a closing option right now since Jimmy's out. But the fact that you even have to think, can he hold up well enough? Because we love what he does elsewhere, I think is a positive for Jaime. Did you have any new thoughts with Jaime?
Well, I just think it's interesting how the conversation has changed based on his play. You know, if you had thought about this maybe a month or so ago, or even early in the season, where Jaime is able to play at such a level with the three-point shooting, with solid enough defense, with the post-up play, with what he can do on the ball, and be this important to Miami, that'd be a huge win, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I think it's more, and I put it in the vein of Miami, can he take these lumps? Can he still impact the game if the shot does continue to dip for a few more games? Can he still find the right gaps? Can he still attack closeouts defensively? How much of it is him? How much of it the team context? How much of it is he's important, so he has to be able to hit this portion of the defense? I think off ball, I don't have much of an issue. He's got really good timing. He shows help at the right times. On ball can get tricky, but how many defenders can we say that with for the Miami Heat right now?
Yes, except for Bam, but to a lesser degree, I guess, like Kyle Lowry. But even then, if that's number two for you, while Jimmy Butler is naturally out, but if that's number two for you, that's also part of the, yeah. And I mentioned the drive stat in the New Year's Revolution episode, where it's like, hey, guess who's dead last in points per possession allowed when drives? It's the Miami Heat. So certainly not just a Jaime-centric issue. Continue.
Well, no, I'm thinking in my head, these are all very important reps for him when it comes playoff time, to where you know that he's seen this already. You're going to have a game plan in place, and you're trusting him to carry over what he's done so far in the playoffs, maybe in a different way or with different timing. So I think the reps are more important for me than just thinking, hey, this won't copy and paste, you know?
Got you. I got you. Let's get into some of the new folks before we get into the YouTube comments to close it out. We start the pod with Golden State news. Let's start with the Golden State rookies. We'll start with Brandon Podziemski and Trayce Jackson-Davis with pods over the last month. 10.9 points per game, 53% on twos, 41% on threes, 53% from the line, which isn't great, but only 1.3 attempts. You still want that to be up, but super low volume. Imagine that can normalize for him. 6.3 rebounds for pods, 2 offensive rebounds per game, which is not normal for a guard, 4.2 assists, 1.4 steals. I've enjoyed watching this dude play. And if you're just talking about stylistic slash scheme fit, Pod feels like someone that just fits into everything Golden State wants to run with their full tilt. Willing screener, knows where to space, knows when to cut, knows when to relocate, which quietly, not super high volume, but shooting 40% on relocation threes per second spectrum, which is another fun stat that they track. So when he does move off the ball and get to a different spot, he can still knock those down. And you know how dangerous that is within Golden State's ecosystem. So that part's cool. A good ball mover. He is a daring passer. I think it was the Christmas game, I believe. That was the first time I heard like the Manu comp for pods. I was like, ooh. That's a little rich, but I do understand how you at least start to get there in terms of just the stylistic comp. Like, obviously, Manu is one of the best guards we've ever had in the league. So it's kind of unfair to put that on a rookie. But I can at least see, like, in terms of the off-ball value that he provides on both ends of the floor. Guess who's second in the league in charges taken over the last month? It's Pods. In addition to him flying around for steals, in addition to him just challenging guys at the rim, he's not afraid to get physical with guys at the rim. And on top of that, then again, off ball, can shoot, willing cutter, will set those early screens for Steph and then relocate off of that. Like, he's just all over the place in the best way. Like, the passing for me is going to be something to monitor just because he feels like he can hit just about anything. And I was chuckling as I was going through some Golden State Portland film earlier. And so Golden State has this play with Steph as a screener in the corner. It's normally like a post-up set for either Andrew Wiggins or Jonathan Kuminga when they're running for him. And it's like, all right, cool. Steph's going to set the screen. We'll see if you botch it. If you do botch it, it's probably going to be a layup or dunk for Kuminga or Wiggins. If not, Steph's now just going to lift up, receive a screen from a big, and they can play out of that. So Pods has the ball as the screen's happening. And like Portland doesn't really botch the screen, but you can see like a sliver of a window for the pass to Kuminga. And Pods lets this thing go. And naturally, it is a turnover. And it's just like, I love that he saw a 0.2% chance of that pass hitting. And he just fired it in there without even thinking about it. Like, obviously, you don't want turnovers. You don't want rookies to throw it away. But again, going back to the earlier scoop point, it's encouraging to me that you're even seeing that and feel the freedom to try that stuff out. And so, like, I'm excited to see what updated scouting report slash Posh just gets more comfortable within the group slash Golden State finds some level of synergy just to see like what he grows into this year and moving forward. But it's been a really fun stretch for him. He just firmly played his way into the rotation. I don't think it was the plan this early in the season for him to be this important, but the Warriors have just blitzed those minutes with him on the floor, him and Trace. I have a stat for that a little bit later. It's been a lot of fun watching Pods. What have been your early impressions?
I mean, he's the only rookie in the month of December to average 11.6 rebounds, 4 assists, has the most 10.5 rebound, 5 assist games by rookies. It's the passing for me. It's very fun, especially fitting in how he wants to play. I think it's more, you know, you nailed a whole lot of it, so I won't hang too long. The extra passes that he makes, the extra plays that he makes, the feel that he has when he's off ball, knowing the difference on when to drive, when to keep it moving, you know, when to make sure I set someone up to come off a screen. Those little things add value to the Warriors. I think the off-ball cutting has been fun. I think he just fits right into what Golden State wants to do. I've liked the activity off-ball defensively. I think he's got really good positioning. He does a good job of help recover. You mentioned charges drawn in the month. He's third in the league in charges drawn per game for the whole year. Fourth in total charges drawn. Which I'm sure Draymond will try and come back on at some point. But I think I wonder sometimes, as good of the context is for him offensively to showcase his game and how he fits, defensively, does it hurt him to a degree? Because teams are like, hey, you are also someone that we can say, come here, buddy, to. So why don't you come over here? Do you feel like he's overtasked, or does his overall fit just make it work?
Like, I lean towards, like, it's just worth it because of what he's adding elsewhere. But, like, it does feel like he gets some of the side stuff, particularly in the minutes that Steph isn't on the floor. And so, honestly, I'm curious to see, like, what this looks like now if, like, he's not starting right now alongside Steph with Chris Paul out. I do wonder now, without Chris Paul in that second unit, if some of that defensive attention or offensive attention, rather, goes to, okay, cool. If we're not able to just get in the flow, how about we just get him since he's not the smallest guy on the court now? Unless it's Corey Joseph beside him, in which case it's probably going to be Corey Joseph. But I do wonder how much more Pod sees of that. But like, he competes on that end. Like, I don't feel like he's someone that people just drive through, et cetera. But I think he will just get that by virtue of the size. So we'll see. We'll see. But I think the offense, and even defensively, like, if you do attack him, you still have to worry about him just taking the elbow and now it's going the other way. And like, watch him navigate screens. If you aren't set, he'll draw that call too. Like, you have to be on it when trying to attack Pods. He doesn't make it easy for you. So I've enjoyed that portion. As for his rookie mate, Trace Jackson Davis, over this recent stretch, 9.8 points per game, over 71% on twos, 65% from the line, 7 boards, an assist and a half, 1.1 blocks in 20.3 minutes per game, a recent starter for the Golden State Warriors now. And so, like, part of this for me is he just looks the part. And similar to Pods, just kind of fits into what they want to do. Very willing screener, willing handoff partner, knows how to fill space, will flow from pick and roll, go to the dunker spot, and then know when to seal in. He'll screen his own guy if he has to. Like, he does those little things. And then defensively, it's kind of Looney-esque as to, do I think he's an elite defender at any particular coverage? I do not. Do I see him on a random switch and be like, okay, this should be okay. I don't want him to defend 15 ISOs, but like, this should be okay if he switches in a pinch. If they have him at the level, this should be okay. Like, 7'1 wingspan isn't great for a 6'9 guy, but like, it's fine. It's +4. I feel fine if they play him a little bit more aggressively. He seems fine in a drop. And like, again, as a rookie big, if you are fine in multiple coverages, you are ahead of the curve. because it is very hard to play defense in this league. And so, like, defensively, he feels solid. Offensively, knows how to fill the gaps, and he gives them a play finisher that, frankly, they just needed at the five spot. Since that's never really been Kevon Looney, but in light of the year that he's had this year, like, they just need someone that can provide more of a vertical presence and someone that can just make the tough catches and convert through traffic. Like, Trace has been able to do that. So I've enjoyed him on both ends. I will say the one thing I'm kind of monitoring with him is the processing speed and the decision-making on short roll opportunities, especially when he's screening for Steph. I like that he's already come. It's kind of like the inverse of Derek Lively, to where it felt early on he gets it and then, okay, where am I passing this to? And then kind of turn into, oh, I can just take this space. I can just get more aggressive. With Trace, it feels like, oh, cool. Well, I have the ball. I'm about to bully you if this defender is small, which is good. You see more of those reps growing. It's like, okay, it's not a bad decision that you decide to take this shot. There is a skip available here. And so we've seen some flashes of that, but I want to see how he finds the balance as he gets more playing time, especially as he continues to screen for Steph or set those off balls for Clay. Like, how quickly can he make those decisions? But it's been good stuff for me with Trace. How have you felt about him so far?
I think the biggest thing for me is they need what he brings to the table. And what he does well, he does consistently. I think his ability to roll really pops. Kevon Looney, a little bit slow over roller. Saric, more of a popper, not going to explode as much. I think what Trace Jackson Davis does as far as off-ball screens, especially with pin downs and being able to explode when there's an empty side, is valuable. Pick and roll, he gets right to that pocket and he's gone. He's just solid. And the Warriors have needed solid plus a little bit of athleticism. I think defensively, I like that you said he's fine. I like that, hey, sometimes we might switch you onto someone. Let's see what that looks like. You just give us this drop, be solid, be consistent, do the dirty work, box out, run the floor, screen, roll. This is your job. Do it well. And he's passed most of the tests. So I think it's more, I don't know how much more he can do at the current moment, but they need what he does. And so maybe it's mixing in or knowing when to slip. I think that's an intriguing element, watching his film, to where, okay, I think he's got an understanding of where to space, the timing, the cutting, the flashing. It's just, they need that so badly.
Yes, any kind of athletic pop they can get, I think, would be super helpful for them. And since we've talked about both of the Golden State rookies, very quick stat per PBP stats. Golden State, in 188 minutes, a plus 24.2 net rating with Pods and Trace on the floor together. That's plus 95 in 188 minutes. That is not what rookies are supposed to look like, especially on a team like this. But they have both come in and provided value on both ends of the floor. Okay, rapid fire to get through these two, and then we're going to the YouTube comments. Amen Thompson finally started to get some playing time. He's back healthy, in the rotation for Houston. 5 points, 4 boards, 2 assists, and a steal in roughly 16 minutes per game. Early thoughts for him, like super early when he came back, it's like, ooh, I still like the passing. This handle's a little loose. Players are really starting to bother you on the digs. That seems to have calmed down. Buddy, I'm so ready for a man to just average 25 minutes a game already. Like, I've seen enough. And we'll dig in deeper with him as the sample grows with him. But watching him in garbage time, which it just kind of happens with how Houston's played on both ends, they'll get the blowout win, also be on the other end of it. And just getting to see random pick and roll and live dribble skip to Jock Landale in the left corner is just like, okay, why is Landale there? But also, this is a rookie just making a live dribble skip pass and not even thinking about it. That part's fun. Watching him glide as a driver is also fun. There was a play against Minnesota, I think late first quarter, I want to say, where he has Kyle Anderson at the top of the key. He starts to attack. I think he's going right. He goes behind his back. Rudy Gobert steps up. He then leaps, like, very quick gather after the behind-the-back move. He goes with this scoop underneath Rudy Gobert, misses it, and before Rudy could even react to the miss, he's up again, gets the offensive rebound, gets a hand one. I was like, that's not normal. That's not what any human is supposed to be able to do. And so as the shot comes around, he's honestly looked more comfortable on those pull-up twos than I anticipated. The three ball is, we're not going to talk about it right now. Just with the Thompson twin, we know where the threes are right now. But inside the arc, looks more comfortable getting into pull-ups than I anticipated. So I'm kind of intrigued to see if that continues, because if it does, not that that's going to bring like real gravity. He's not going to be taking 8 pull-up twos a game or anything like that. But if he's comfortable there, like maybe the projection to get to the catch and shoot three is going to go more smoothly in year two, year three than I thought. And if that comes along, I trust the drives. I trust the passing. I trust the defense, or eventually I will trust the defense as he gets up to NBA speed. He just has the tools. He has the instincts. He's going to be incredibly fun. Did you have any early Amen thoughts?
I'm intrigued by the cutting potential and what that could bring for the Rockets. They lean into it to add on to you. It's the drives for me. Being able to get downhill when he's spaced, I think in pick and roll, he's shown that he can handle some of that responsibility. You mentioned being comfortable getting to that pull-up. I think for me, it's just the mix and the blend as far as those plays where it's clear he has a comfort. It's clear he knows that he can stay patient. It's clear he knows and feels comfortable attacking the drop and getting in the paint and being able to mix speeds, which I think is a positive. So I do want to see what it looks like if Houston does lean into more of him being able to have some of those on-ball reps, depending on who he's out there with. I'm sure Rockets fans will add that to their list of things they want to see. I think when he's able to draw help for this Houston team, it's very helpful, especially for them to have another playmaker or someone else who can get in the paint. And it's not just heavily relying on, we need this to happen so the defense will shift. I just want to see how much they lean into that aspect and how much he grows within it. But I think there's a lot of potential there based on the drives that he's shown. And I think the playmaking comes through the more he has the ball in his hands.
Got you. Two quick things. One, I'm in related, and one just generally Houston related. I'll sprinkle this in on the defense for a man. Like, I'm keeping an eye on just what his stance is, because I feel like he's very upright sometimes. I don't know how much of that is just a technical, you just have to get NBA coaching to get better at that, versus Houston is switching nearly half the screens that he's involved in per second spectrum. And maybe he's just prepping, okay, the screen's coming, I'm just going to get out here and make sure I get a body on him. So like, that's something that's I'm going to track over the next month or so. So I'll have a better feel for that portion of the defense moving forward. And just as a cursory note, not going to talk about him on the pod today, but Cam Whitmore showing some fun stuff as a scorer in the limited amount of time that he's gotten recently. So just keep an eye on him. If he ends up breaking into the rotation in earnest, that'll probably be someone we talk about moving forward, but did want to say his name at least. Last guy, Julian Strother. Shade under 7 points per game, 48% on twos, 32% from three, two boards, an assist, and roughly a steal in 15 minutes per game. The shot hasn't fallen for him, but you can definitely see the scoring instincts. Like, it's kind of just a carryover for me, like watching him in summer league, a little bit of preseason, like, oh, nah, this guy can just light it up when necessary. As long as he's taking good shots, like, I'm mostly okay. Defensively is kind of where my eyes went as a unnamed friend of the program, as we were expressing some early Julian Strother excitement. It's like, yeah, wait till you see him on defense, though. Not going to put that person on blast. So I was like, let me key in. Let's see what this looks like. He does compete. It isn't great, though. Like, I think he can do a better job of just prepping for some of the off-ball stuff that he faces. It feels like he's given a lot of space, and he ends up doing the little hop, like, oh, okay, I got to start running now. And by then, like, that's already too late, defending movement shooters in the league and stuff like that. And so just general awareness off-ball, being prepared to navigate those screens, especially since he's particularly good at it right now, that's going to be important. But I do generally enjoy the effort that he's showing. And if he can just be below average to neutral defensively, like, I do think shots are going to fall for him. It's very clear that he can shoot. It's clear that he's comfortable boogieing one-on-one. And you get him into some lineups where he's actually playing alongside Jokic, like, he'll just get easier looks there and stuff. So, like, I'm not super concerned. So some interesting early flashes from Julian so far. What do you have on that front?
Just a really good fit for Denver. I think the off-ball movement is really fun to watch, especially within the context of that offense. I think the pressure he can put on teams in that way to blend in is very good. I think the mixture of off-ball and on-ball creation or threat is very good, especially for that team. You space the floor, let it fly. You can run sets for him, run him off screens, can mix him in pick and roll or handoffs. He just fits what they want to do. The only thing with him, hopefully once he's able to come back, one, I'm intrigued by what do the drives look like? What does it happen? How often does he go to it? What does he look like against contact? And then what is the next part that's going to allow him to stay on the court? Is it just defense? Is it just consistency, knowing, hey, it's not going to be a shot every time. Maybe it's drive and kick. What is going to be the next step for him? Or is he just going to be in this phase early with Denver where I know he could score. We all know he could score. If we don't need the scoring, it may not be his night. But if we need the scoring, we're going towards him. But I think it's been good development for him to at least establish a good base for Denver.
Got you. All right. Well, we'll get into more rookies. Naturally, I always break the call out. If you have basketball questions for us about the rookie class or just anything basketball related, you don't have to wait for a specific mailbag episode. We just dig into those on Thursday sometime. So email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. If there are some rookies that we didn't get to talk about, I know like Cason Wallace is one that we're probably going to end up spending some time on moving forward. But, you know, email us. We can talk about it. We'll get our rookie thoughts in. To these YouTube comments, though, appreciate everyone that actually participated. I did appreciate, I should have copied the name in here. The one guy's like, I'm not a dunker or a roamer. I'm just a listener. Sorry, I don't have a resolution. I got a good chuckle out of that one. So I guess you were just a spacer. We'll settle in on that. That's fine. Anyway, let's get into some of these. This one from Jeremiah, I want to say Krug. It might be Krug, 94. My New Year's resolution for my team, Detroit, is to not go on another 20-plus game losing streak. Matter of fact, don't break your own record. You should have lost like this last year to tank for Wimby. I got a good laugh out of that one. We have one from Michael DiCamillo, I want to say. I may have said that wrong. My apologies if I did. Resolution for the Cavs. Try two big lineups with Tristan Thompson. Last year, they got smoked on the offensive glass by New York in the playoffs. I think putting out a Mobley Thompson, obviously after Mobley returns from injury, or an Allen Thompson lineup gives you better rebounding on offense and defense. Also, on offense, I think having Thompson out there in a two big lineup gives more screening and pick and roll options for Mitchell, Garland, Strus, et cetera, to pick from. Steve, do you have thoughts on that one?
Got to raise my hand. Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I did some research. So I think they've done it in 11 games over 46 minutes. And that two-man duo has a 107.1 offensive rating and a 118.8 defensive rating. And that really can't be the bit considering you are looking for that to be kind of the defensive unit. So I do think it's a good idea. It's something you could tap into in the playoffs, depending on the matchup, but you do have to be careful because it kind of becomes like a slightly less expensive version of Mobley and Allen to a degree, but I like the idea. I would just say Tristan Thompson and George Niang, very good together.
Okay, there we go. There we go. Next one from I Take Major L's, which is a tremendous, tremendous name. Who among us, man? Who among us? New Year's resolution for the Lakers. Please stick a guard, Austin Reeves or D'Angelo Russell, in the starting lineup and don't let Reddish and Vando share the court together at any point in the game. Well, we got one of those things at least. Austin Reeves now starting.
You might want to begin to take some major W's. Go buy a lottery ticket. Because Austin Reeves started every game in 2024, and I checked the Clippers game off memory. Vanderbilt came in for Reddish in the first quarter, and I think he did so in the third. And I think D'Lo also came in for Reeves to start the game. So, hey, it's coming.
Might be onto something. Take a major W. We like that. This one from Bryce Griffin, 4792. Hashtag dunker engagement. The hashtag will always get you here. For the Kings, I think our New Year resolution should be shaking things up with either Herder or Barnes. I was hoping we'd be in the OG sweepstakes, but that can't happen now. Well, they were in talks for Pascal Siakam, and then 17 minutes later, they were no longer in talks with Pascal Siakam. So I guess at least Sacramento brass seems to be thinking along those lines at the very least. So we'll see. We got a month into the trade deadline. Very cool. Next one from Phantom Isle. Celtics New Year's resolution. And this wasn't the only Celtics comment that we got, but just the first, I just chose this one. There were like three or four that had the same message. Drive the ball in all caps. Please, and also in all caps, stop going ISO whenever the game gets remotely close. Just run your offense. It's one of the best in the league. I think I can speak for Steve, and I want to say, yes, maintain your tempo. Keep doing things versus slowing it down and taking side step threes. Anyway, next is going to come from, I think it's Ringo77. New Year's resolution for the Sixers to make a trade for a wing to replace Tobias Harris using their draft picks. Mikal Bridges is likely to be unattainable, but I'm hoping they can get Cam Johnson or Dorian Finney-Smith. I even settle for a trade with the Hawks for DeJounte Murray and DeAndre Hunter, or with the Blazers for Jeremy Grant and Malcolm Brogdon. I do appreciate that's the settle portion.
I was about to say, if you settling for those kind of feels like W's. I'm not going to lie to you. You might get one of those people, but I would say Jeremy Grant is a little closer to Tobias than some folks may think. You can take that however you want, but I'll just throw that out there.
Okay, I see. would no longer be the Jeremy Grant revenge game at the very least. It'll be the return. Anyway, next one from Andrew Livingston 973, a faithful commenter and consumer of the pod. Really appreciate you, Andrew. Raptors' New Year's resolution is to stick to their starting five of Quickly, Barnes, Pirtle, Siakam, and Barrett, as it lets others like Gary Trent Jr. and Dennis Schroeder to shine in their roles off the bench. Well, if the Warriors game was any indication, I think they'll be all right. And the last one from Jay Wilson TV, our dear pal Jeremy, Pelicans' New Year's resolution. Use their two best players in action during the clutch with CJ and Trey on the wings. You're 0-6 in games decided by 3 points or less. Please, I beg of you. Just a wonderful, wonderful
thing. You could use B.I. and then the ball swings to Zion. So does that technically count, or is this asking for B.I. Zion pick and roll?
I feel like the answer is yes.
Okay. Well, then I'll apologize for that immediately after to take away the impact of what I just saw on TV.
Oh, okay. All right. Tremendous content. All right. Well, with that being the case, thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. Really appreciate y'all checking us out. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. And if you're watching this on JJ Reddit's YouTube channel and for some reason you aren't subscribed to JJ Reddit's YouTube channel, please subscribe to JJ Reddit's YouTube channel. Good content. Also, we are here every Tuesday, every Tuesday, every Tuesday, every Tuesday. Or to remove any confusion in 2024.
Hey,
it will be us.
Better get torn up than that first Tuesday we ain't here.
That's true. Every Tuesday, unless noted otherwise. But we are scheduled to be here on Tuesday, so we are not tricking y'all when the video appears on Tuesday as scheduled. Anyway, you can follow me on Twitter at NikaiZNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join us in the Dunker Spot community. We're having fun discussions in there on Twitter. Join us for the online Dunker Spot watch parties. The link is in the description, both YouTube and audio versions. You can watch basketball games with us if you have League Pass / cable. Sign in. It is free. No shenanigans. You're getting live analysis. You're having fun conversations. We're tapping into a whole bunch of randomness. If we have late game / end of game / overtime things, Steve and I are going through clips live and talking about what happened, why it worked, why it didn't. It's really fun. It's really light, but also you'll get your basketball fix as well. The link should be in the descriptions. Click on that. Once again, it is free. No shenanigans. If it's not hyperlinked for whatever reason for the audio listeners here, just copy and paste the link that's there into your browser. Once again, it is free. No shenanigans. And with that, we will catch y'all audio only on Thursday.
Hey, who made you mad about the Tuesdays, man?